listening to New England Public Radio News. I'm Adam Frenier, and this is the shortlist NEPR's Week in Review. With us today in studio, Dave Eisenstatter of the Daily Hampshire Gazette, and on the line, Larry Parnas, investigations editor with the Berkshire Eagle. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks.
This week, two Springfield police officers, one current and one former, were arrested and charged in federal court. Prosecutors say Greg Bigda and Stephen Vignott used unreasonable force against a pair of Latino juveniles during a 2016 arrest. Bigda is also alleged to have told them, "Welcome to the white man's world," and later falsified police reports. Orlando Ramos is president of the Springfield City Council.
Whenever these sort of details come out where an officer has abused his authority, these don't do well for public trust. Second of all, the details themselves are very disturbing. You know, the fact that they treated these teenagers the way that they did, it's unacceptable.
Bigda and Vignott pleaded not guilty to all charges, and Bigda is now suspended from the force without pay. Dave, Bigda was originally suspended for 60 days in connection with this incident, while Vignott left the police force. Did the city make a mistake in its handling of this incident in the first place?
I would say this is something that you really need to look at with the harshest eye possible. I think that Mayor Sarno came out with a strong statement, which is important. But the things that these officers were alleged to have done and to have said to these minority teens is just atrocious. And it's a really problematic situation to have on the police force. You know, these are officers, if they're under investigation or something like that, they should not be on the streets on patrol until it's resolved one way or another.
Larry, what can Springfield city officials do to rebuild the public trust that Ramos brings up?
Well, if they serve on a federal jury, they could find that these counts in this indictment are warranted and convict. Of course, that's not really the municipal civic role. You know, I thought Sarno wasn't really presuming innocence here. He spoke of this reflecting unfairly on good police officers. You know, I have to wonder why it took so long and why it took the federal government to come in with a seemingly more meaningful attack on this. You know, just as the federal government did in the 60s, again, in the civil rights era, when localities were not as ready to move forward against, local law enforcement.
Tuesday is, of course, Election Day, and while much of the attention is on statewide races and ballot questions in Massachusetts, one local contest has grabbed a lot of headlines, the one for Berkshire District Attorney. As you might remember, Andrea Harrington beat two other candidates, including the current DA, Paul Cacaviello, in the Democratic primary. Cacaviello then decided to mount a write-in bid, and ever since, both sides have traded jabs and accusations. Larry, it's clear the candidates have about had it with each other at this point.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Has this race become more about personalities and less about issues?
I think if there was one personality that was stalking the scene here, I would nominate David Capeless, the former 14-year DA. It was his actions to help usher his deputy into the office, Paul Cacaviello, that raised initial concerns about what kind of office that was. Capeless was kind of a flashpoint figure, and I think he's been personally smarting from the way his tenure has been described. I think, in a way, the fact that it's come down to this now with Cacaviello running a write-in challenge, you know, the other contest was a primary in early September. I think people are much more tuned into this being an election day. So I think this will be, in some ways, a better test of what the whole county thinks of this office and who should hold it.
Dave, we saw with that state Senate race for Stan Rosenberg's old seat that a write-in can have success. Just ask Joe Comerford, who won that seat without her name on that ballot. What about in this case? Can a write-in win?
Yeah, I think that you just answered your own question. I think definitely a write-in can win, and Joe Comerford won decisively in that race. I think that some of the volunteers on the Harrington campaign are being accused of sort of sowing confusion, you know, trying to kind of make it more difficult for a write-in candidate if you're confused about whether the person's name is on the ballot. I think with the amount of attention that these races get, you do see that people become aware of who's running for the race and what's at stake. So I think it is possible. And Cacoviello, he's got his argument about experience, and Harrington, she's got Richard Neal's endorsement. So there is a lot at play, and I think this will be a lively race.
A report released this week cleared a Smith College employee of wrongdoing after an incident this summer involving an African-American student. The worker called campus police on the student, who is eating her lunch during a break from her job on campus. The law firm hired by Smith recommended changes to the school's policy on reporting suspicious people on campus. Dave, what should the next step be for Smith College officials?
Well, definitely something. I mean, it cannot end with this report. I think that comments from the ACLU and comments from even the president of Smith College made it clear that there has to be a lot more conversation around this. I think updated policies that really do speak to inclusion on campus of black and brown students. You know, I think some real larger community conversations around these issues that we are seeing repeatedly, not just at Smith, but at UMass and many other places.
Larry, briefly, what do you think about this?
Well, I agree with David. This is serious. And yet it is just kind of weird. I read through the law firm's finding here, and my first thought was that I bet the cost of that report could put somebody through college for a year, or once upon a time could have. It's a serious investment by the colleges. Colleges have to be models of equitable behavior. But I think it does lead to some kind of ridiculous pursuits. And I find this report, you know, in search of was there overt discrimination by a college employee, kind of needless when the president of the college comes out and says you can't rule out that there was implicit bias. And while the ACLU has some models of how you could work with a institution staff to try to work on that, I think the particulars here in this case, they strike me as kind of ridiculous. I feel for this student worker who was there. She definitely got the raw end of this deal. And, you know, the person who called it in, you know, if you read the report, seems like kind of a busybody who totally overreacted. And I don't see how that's not going to keep happening. It's certainly a public issue of great importance, but it also, human nature is going to leave a lot of variables that just cannot be programmed out of existence.
All right. Larry Parnas of the Berkshire Eagle and Dave Eisenstatter of the Daily Hampshire Gazette, thank you so much for joining us today.
Glad to be here.
Oh, you're welcome.
And thank you, our loyal listeners of The Shortlist, NEPR's Week in Review. And remember, you can catch us at any time, wherever you get your podcasts, or at nepr.net/podcast hub. I'm Adam Frenier, and this is New England Public Radio.